flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
As we continue to endure the long off season, both sides of town have some decisions to make. So, who should stay and who should go?
Should I stay or should I go now?
With Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Robert Jr. puts a charge in this one, going to center. Ooh. Adios! La Pantera goes back to back, and the White Sox take a 2-0 lead in the third.
He almost seems surprised there a little bit on that home run call, because that's what can happen with Luis Robert. It's inside the
or
clubhouse.
Or any home run call. That's,
that's true. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey with you at the 10 o'clock hour here on Inside the Clubhouse. And Luis Robert's name surfaced. His name's been out there all offseason as a possible trade candidate. But the real issue the White Sox have, as we know, is that it's Jekyll and Hyde with a guy who's uber talented, who finished as a top 10 MVP candidate just 2 years ago, finished 12th, won the Silver Slugger. He's won a Gold Glove. He's been the best of the White Sox core that they identified for that first rebuild, but he's only played 100 games twice, albeit back-to-back seasons, but he played exactly 100 games this year. So, Bruce, we saw a report about the Cincinnati Reds having some interest in Luis Robert. There are teams that have interest. Like, let's put that out there. But they want to do it at their price. He's an affordable, controllable, potential superstar.
Or he was once.
That's why I said potential. You know, potential. If he's going to be a star.
2023?
Yeah.
He was a star, right?
Yeah.
So was Yon Mancada in 2019.
Oh, God. Right. Please don't say that name in this office again.
1 year wonders.
Yeah. And last year at times, like, he had a 657 OPS last year. So that's what the White Sox have for sale. And there are teams calling, offering nickels, pennies, dimes on the dollar. I do think the White Sox would like to move on from Luis Robert, but they're not going to do it for a price where the other team's like, here's what we're doing.
So as you mentioned, there's 3 years of contract control. This year at $15 million, I think two option years at $20 million. So for a star player, that's peanuts, okay? If you're getting a star year from Robert, like in 2023, which was not so long ago, it's a steal, okay? We know defensively, when he's healthy, he's one of the top center fielders in the game. Last year, even though they were losing all their games just about, they had to stop him from wanting to steal bases because he was that adamant about trying to win that way. They told him to stop running at a certain point. They didn't want him to hurt himself. this guy, you know, again, had two very serious injuries that were similar, right?
Yep.
So the red flag to any team that could trade for Robert is this going to happen again? Are we going to miss him for a whole year what's he going to be like, and why didn't he hit last year when he did come back and play the 100 games? Why did he look like he was always behind when it came to the power game, when it came to the contact? What was missing in his swing that had to be refound? I personally think that if I'm another team, I'm trading for Luis Robert.
Me too.
Right. I mean, you. Let's hear your reason.
My reason is this. First of all, if I'm another team, I'm a team like the Atlanta Braves. I'm a team like the. This is if I were acquiring him. I'm a team like the Philadelphia Phillies. My infrastructure is strong. It's in place. I'm not acquiring this player, Bruce, to be the superstar that he was told he was going to be in Chicago. He was given that when he signed that contract without playing a game. I have a team that I know exactly where he slides and fits in. I know exactly where he's going to be in the lineup. I know I'm going to plug and play him and play good defense out in center field. And I don't need him to be shoulder the load of being that guy, because we have guys in the lineup every day that put in the work and are the leaders of this team. I'm just going to go out and acquire him based off of what I think we can get out of him. And if we get that out of him, then we talk about picking him up next year. That's the beauty of his contract. It's really a three-year deal with two opt-outs, right? I mean, that's what it is. At $55 million, a very affordable contract in terms of the player you could be getting.
Yeah,
and if he flops, then you let him go.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, that all makes perfect sense to me. The value of what you give up,
sure,
and what the White Sox are asking. So the White Sox...
They want two top five players, right, in your organization.
And let me ask you another question. Are the White Sox better off not trading him now and rolling the dice that for the first 3 months he's back to being the dominant Luis Robert, and then you get three players at the trading deadline for him that fit in with what you want to do?
I don't know. You know, I've thought a lot about that question, and I honestly, I'm 50-50. I'm super torn. I don't know. The realistic baseball sense of me says, well, yeah, that's probably your best bet. The other side, the realistic Luis Robert side of me is going, well, you're going to be stuck with him because he's going to hit the IL at some point in May and miss 25 games. And it's just reality when you look at the back of the baseball card.
So here's one thing that I think I know about Luis Robert. He believes he's a great player. Every time he goes out there, he wants to be a great player, and he wants to play every day. There's a characteristic about guys that I've seen over my career that I think he has, and that is the belief is strong that he can go out there and be one of the top players in the game without letting other people know about it, okay? Just the way he carries himself, the tools that he has, I believe he can still be a great player in the
game. I do, too.
And he's, what, 27, 28?
Yes.
You know?
It's insane. So, he's 27 years old.
So, you know, people are tired of him here, right?
Yeah.
Organization's tired of him. The fans are tired of him. Broadcasters are tired of him. I'll take a 27-year-old with those type of tools anytime and roll the dice at $55 million for 3 years. It's nothing. It's no money at all.
None. I mean, it could be one for 19 if you want it to be because of the two buyouts.
Right. So I think it's a great buy-in. Again, the other teams are going, yeah, we're not giving our number 2, 5, and 15 for him, okay?
And that's fine. I think, and maybe their number two is not a top 100. Maybe he's a top 100. Maybe he's a top 125. I would say this. If it hits for that team, and that's the big gamble, right, of this entire situation, the player that they're giving up will never be Luis Robert. If Luis Robert ends up being, if he hits.
I agree.
They will not get a player as talented as Luis Robert.
Look, the 2023 version of Luis Robert, there's only five players in Major League Baseball that are better than that, okay? Defensively, on the bases, home runs, you know, slug. And the way that he played is pretty effortless.
It is. And I think that annoys people because he's that talented that it looks like there's a I don't care. But it's not that. he's playing a child's game sometimes with the talent that he has.
He's not Ken Griffey Jr.
No.
But he has many of the characteristics that a Ken Griffey Jr. had.
I think, you know, it's funny. I thought he could be Ronald Acuna Jr. I don't think he can be that type of hitter. But he has that type of talent. He has that type of arm. He has that type of power. He has that type of speed.
Right.
So maybe he's a poor man's Ronald Acuna Jr. How many teams are lining up for that guy?
312-644-6767. Do you hit 38 home runs by mistake?
No. No. You don't fall. You talk about falling into. If that was the case, Eloy Jimenez would have had 35 homers every year by falling into. And that you don't hit 38.
He had 1 year at 31, right?
Yeah, so the one year.
Right.
Let's go to the phone lines. We have Mike. He needs some advice as a White Sox fan as we talk about the White Sox possibly trading Luis Robert Jr. prior to spring training. What's going on, Mike?
Well, guys, this whole conversation today kind of makes the points that I'm trying to make. I am, as a lifelong Sox fan, completely 110% apathetic about the team. This is the worst team going into spring training, and I'm grateful for Ethan Katz's positivity. I have never seen a worse team going into the spring training than this squad. I don't want any more statues. I don't want any more 2005 reunions. I don't want any more, these guys are coming up with minors. I don't want to hear any more Luis Robert, hit 38. I can't do it anymore. But, Bruce, I have tried to be interested and focus my attention on the Cubs. I have tried to be fascinated with the park, with the young players. I can't do it. I can't get over
you know
that
why?
Emotional
you know
barrier.
Why, Mike? Because you're a White Sox fan.
I can't say it on the, Bruce,
you're a White Sox
I can't
fan.
Say it on, right, and I can't give you the real reasons on the air. But in seriousness, guys, I'd be interested in your thoughts. I think the White Sox are playing their fan base for fools, essentially. I think there are a lot of apathetic fans. I think there are a lot of us that we're just totally out of energy for the team again. Do the Sox realize that that's happening to them, or am I completely wrong?
You're not wrong. Okay. Like, apathy is, I think that's where everyone is right now. You were asked to be patient for 4 years during your rebuild that failed. It produced two playoff wins, one division championship, and ended up with the worst record in the history of baseball. So maybe do the wait and see. You're looking for White Sox fan advice. Maybe wait. You want to do the show me state? They have a lot of talent, and I know you're sick of hearing about it. We've heard the White Sox have a top farm system before, but this is a different group in charge. From top to bottom, it's a different group. Maybe not ownership, but from GM down, this Chris Getz has brought in more voices from the outside, more voices outside of the organization than anyone in the last 30-plus years.
Nobody has said in the White Sox organization they're going to be better this year.
Nope.
Many of them off the record will tell you they believe in 2026 that it's going to be the year that the talent is going to be very competitive. Now, a White Sox fan hearing that right now is turning us off. And they're going, well, we'll tune in the White Sox in 2026. No, I think you want to watch some of the ascension of these young players getting better. Because this isn't a team of free agents and fringe guys that
like
they went into
year.
The season
right.
in last year.
You had
right?
Paul DeJong and Nicky
so,
Lope.
I mean, you have Perez, but you're going to flip him, okay,
yeah,
at
right.
some point. But again, they were careful about bringing him in because of his abilities to deal with the situation and be a good team player. But the reality is you want to watch your team get better, okay? You want to watch talented guys like Smith come up, like Cannon continue from where he was last year. You want to watch the Kai Bushes, people like that, develop in the organization. So there is talent there. Watching it while watching your team lose a lot of games still, very difficult.
Let's go back to the phone lines. There's some thoughts popping in about Luis Robert. Ralph, what's going on? Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on today. Good show. Talking to White Sox. Finally, somebody. diehard White Sox fan. Anybody who can beat the Cubs, I'm all for too. But that's another story. Luis Robert, he's 27 years old. He could sign an extension right now, and I know people's going to think I'm crazy, but he'll be 30, right in his prime about the time the White Sox have got this rebuild complete. You want to go to some other team, you want to get their minor leaguers who you never know if they're going to make the majors, All we need to do with Lewis Robert is keep him healthy, and he's going to be a stud. He can be not quite as good as Ronald Okuda, never be a Ken Griffey Jr., but he can be a 35 to 40 home run hitter, hit around 280, and be a leader. Why would you want to trade someone like that? And then, Bruce, you made a point also of why don't you keep him, see if he has a good 3 months? And I've always thought that, too. I mean, if you're going to trade him, you trade him at his lowest point of his career. That doesn't make any sense, and ask a ransom for him. So I want you guys' opinion on what
right.
I said.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that's what you do. How badly they want to get rid of the $19 million and get other players in there learning how to play center field at the big league level, I don't have that answer for you, other than the fact that they are still in a quest for building their organization with young players that they can identify as talented major leaguers for the future. Just like everybody else, the White Sox are just in a greater mode of that than anyone else in baseball, maybe outside of Colorado and the Miami Marlins.
I'd say with Ralph, he's talking about a player that everyone's been hoping for 5 years. Why would you get rid of a guy who could hit 280 with 35 to 40 homers? We've been waiting for that player.
He did it once. Okay.
And he said, well, all we need to do is keep him healthy. Well, that's been the biggest challenge.
If he hadn't had 2023, I'd say, you know, there's not enough hope here, right?
Sure.
But 2023 is there. It's real. Now, can he get back to that form as an offensive player? That's the question other general managers are trying to answer right now.
Tommy Hotovy, pitching coach of the Cubs, will join us shortly here on Inside the Clubhouse. Let's take one more call before we go to break here. Mike talking about Lewis Robert. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, guys. I've been not much. I've been on the cusp of wanting to get rid of him. You know, we got rid of everybody else that was associated with the rebuild. I want to get rid of him, but I don't. I agree with the last caller. Keep him. He's 27 years old. It's cheap. See what he can do. But somebody in the organization has to figure him out. I don't think he could ever be a leader in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I think he had that chance and let it go. But somebody has to figure out why, when he comes back from being hurt or at any time, that he cannot hit a breaking ball. It happened with the two other guys that we had, too. They couldn't hit breaking balls. And okay, so he hits a home run every, 10 at-bats or whatever. But he can't hit a breaking ball.
Not enough.
They know that.
Yeah. Great points. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, look, it's the big conundrum, because I could argue 50-50 either way. Keep him, trade him, but we all have PTSD from it. And the talent's there. What's going to be really upsetting to people and fans, Bruce, is if they trade him and he goes and hits 290 with 32 homers and 90 RBI and win a gold glove, because it's very possible.
But you basically want him to do that if you get the quality back that you want.
I totally agree.
Again, that's the idea. Are the White Sox officials, the young core front office, are they good enough to pick the right guys out for a trade for him? It appears they did a nice job, according to other people in baseball, getting the four guys in the trade for Crochet. Okay?
Yep.
You have to keep that going. And again, are all these guys going to work out? No, they're not.
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. Will Lewis Robert break camp with the Chicago White Sox?
I think so, yes.
Just to be different, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they find a partner.
Well, you know, Cincinnati has been talking to him. You know, Terry Francona going over there as a manager. They're looking for a slugger. You know, they're looking at the Mets situation, too, and how that's going to work out. They know they're one power hitter away from really competing for winning that division as well.
Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy joins us on the other side of a break. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
I'm excited to get down to camp, throw to some hitters, and really see where we're at. And I'm excited to work with Tommy Hotovy and you know, bounce some ideas off him. So I'm excited and seeing what these guys can bring to the table and what I can bring to the table and see what we can create.
That's new Cubs closer Ryan Pressly on Bernstein and Harris earlier this week, jacked up about pitching for our next guest. Now joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score with Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey is Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy.
Tommy is nice enough to join us from the road. Tommy, how fast are you going right now? Are you are you out of Albuquerque on the way to Arizona?
Yep. Yeah, I'm out of Albuquerque. Fun fact, I never drive as fast as I could throw a baseball, which luckily for the road, I didn't throw very hard, so I never get above that speed limit.
Okay. Well, yeah, keep using that fuzz buster that you have out there, and it always helps on those long rides. Tommy, just a view of, let's start with Ryan Pressly. What is that? What does that bring strength-wise to your the back end of your bullpen? What do you first think of when you hear we now have Ryan Pressly?
I mean, I think the first thing you think of is just a veteran presence, a guy who's been there and done it, has had a phenomenal career. But you look at his postseason career too; just has had an unbelievable run. You know, in some big moments in the postseason, and a guy that's going to bring a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge to that group. I think I could go into a long story about how Ryan and I know each other. We can talk about that here in a bit, but just in terms of like what we have added, and just in terms of like the person and what he's done, what he's proven he can do. I mean, it's going to help us out tremendously.
And then how much, I guess, pun intended here, relief does it give you as a pitching coach? I mean, knowing that. Last year, 26 blown saves. I mean, let's be honest, like you get seven of those and you guys are in the postseason, but how it sets up the rest of your bullpen. You look at Porter Hodge. You know, we know the makeup, the stuff and everything he has. When you have a guy like Pressly that can come in, that's had the experience, that has had that ninth inning experience, the postseason experience, and mentor a guy like Porter Hodge who's got the stuff and makeup to be a late inning dominant guy. But when you're looking at whoever is on the mound, whether it's Justin Steele, Shota Imanaga, Javier Assad, whoever it might be that day, and you're setting up your bullpen to know at the back end, you can work backwards now that you have a guy that you can plug and play in the ninth.
Yeah, I mean, it always shortens the game, you know, a little bit when you have guys like that at the back end. But what I think it does, you know, I think what Porter Hodge was able to do last year was tremendous. We still believe he can close out games. We still believe he can pitch some big innings, the back end of the bullpen. You also have guys like Merriweather, you know, hoping that he's healthy and going to have a better year this year. Nate Pearson, like, we've got a lot of options back there, and this just lengthens that group. I think when you look at the totality of a season and you're relying on two to three guys to pitch those high leverage situations over the course of a year, that's tough. And the more guys you can add into that circle of trust that you can throw in and mix together is only going to benefit the group as a whole. And it allows you to do things in April, you know, by giving guys days rest or giving guys time off that you wouldn't be able to do if you only had to rely on two guys. So I think it's going to lengthen the group. I think it's going to make the entire group better. And it's going to allow us to give guys rest when they need it and also push guys when they're feeling great.
Tommy Hotovy joining us from the road on the way to Mesa, Arizona, pitching coach of the Chicago Cubs on 670thescore.com, 670 The Score. He's Ryan. I'm Bruce. We're here for you every Saturday, 52 weeks, sometimes 50 weeks out of the year, talking baseball. Tommy, how much easier would your job be if we didn't know there was an innings limit for pitchers who had been hurt the year before? I know it's fantasy, but the reality of a guy like a Ben Brown coming back next year, Cade Horton, two power arms that could be on their way to being stars, on their way to being dominant starting pitchers, big-time bullpen pitchers. How much easier would that job be if you didn't have the history of how you treat pitchers returning from injuries and how many innings they can go?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think the way the game was always played and how you dealt with injuries in the past was all – it was very it was objective, but it was very subjective at the same time. There were a lot of people that just said, oh, we believe you can't jump 30% in innings, or if you have 100 innings last year, you can only throw 130, 140 this year. And a lot of that was just based off of previous work done with players. And that's an important foundation to work up out of, but I think we have so much more information now than we ever have in the game. I can look into biomechanical data and tell and try to tell if a guy is fatiguing. We have pitch data. We have a wide range of information. We use Catapult, and we use other resources that help track workload. So, you know, just to put an innings limit on a guy and say he's not going to throw over 120 innings, I think is a good foundation buffer, but it's not going to tell the whole story. Like, we definitely take into consideration a lot of information, obviously communicate with the players, see how they're feeling. So I think, you know, to answer your question, I feel like I use all that information already. So I don't know if it would make it easier or more difficult or less difficult if we didn't have these innings limits. We would still be probably tracking everything the same way and trying to make the best decision possible based off the information we have.
Garrett Crochet goes from 25 innings in the minors to 140 innings in 1 year. I mean, again, I guess you have to go by the player, right?
Yeah, you do. You do. Not every case is the same. I think, like you said, you kind of can live in this world where you kind of have an understanding of what expectations may be for that next season. But again, you're also evaluating a lot of things in the moment, in week to week, month to month. So, I really like how our organization communicates top down and tries to make the best decisions possible based on all the information we have. So. So we obviously are very cognizant and aware of the guys that had injuries last year and what our goals are for them this year. But again, we're going to take each week and each month kind of in stride and make sure we're making the best decisions throughout the entire season.
Speaking of a couple of those guys coming off injuries or last year, we had Cade Horton on the show last week, and quite impressive for a guy who's been through some of the stuff he's been through, whether it's Tommy John or the shoulder last year. He talked about you don't want to be injured, but he thinks mentally what it's done for him on the mental makeup side of the game has done wonders, and he'll be ready for any setbacks on the mound, you know, if he has a bad start and his ability to recover and bounce back. There's so much hope about Cade, about Ben Brown. What is your plan, and how do they factor into the 2025 Cubs? Because you guys have one goal, and that's getting back to the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of those guys are tremendous talents, extremely high upside guys that we feel could be major contributors for us over the course of the, you know, next few years. And both of those guys had some adversity last year. And I talk a lot, especially to our young players, and about learning through adversity, learning through struggles, learning through injury. You're going to learn more during those times about yourself, about what you need to do to be a professional, what you need to do to take care of your body, than you ever would if everything just went well and you rolled and you had great. Like, obviously, we want guys to succeed and have great seasons, but if you struggled for the first time in the big leagues, that's going to be a much bigger adjustment than dealing with some of these things as you're coming up and developing. We talk, and like Theo Epstein always would talk about this when we were around, is like, for, you know, development is not. Never linear. Like, progression in this game is never linear. And so I think it's a very important thing to remember when we talk about some of these young pitchers, because it's so important to not put this expectation of a timeline on them, like, oh, Cade Horton needs to be up here this year and pitching for the Cubs, and Ben Brown needs to have this great year. Like, yes, that is great. That would be ideal if those guys are doing that. But we also understand what they can do and what the value that they bring to this organization, and we want to make sure we're making the right decisions and helping them grow along this path. So I fully expect those guys to be major contributors for us. That could be this year, that could be next year. But both of those guys are doing well, have had good off seasons, and, you know, obviously we're expecting big things from them this year.
Body types for starting pitchers. I kidded with, I'm not going to tell you who, but one of the starting pitchers I was kidding with last year and saying, well, my body type fits exactly into what your rotation is here with the Cubs. I think I could pitch, you know, and we laughed a lot about it. But what does a body type mean to a starting pitcher? And, you know, some of your guys who are outstanding pitchers on the Chicago Cubs wouldn't be picked out on the street as a star pitcher for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah. You know, I think every guy's built a little differently, but you definitely tend to see more of the relievers. The bullpen guys are a little bit more of that explosive type build, a little more, probably a little bit more athletic in terms of like how they move and how fast they move. You know, starters are very repetitive. You know, it's a high volume task. They throw a lot of pitches. They may have to maintain their stuff over a long period of time. So very, very strength-based, very dynamic in how they move, but still being able to repeat that delivery over and over and over again. And I think, like as a starter, we'd love you to throw hard. We'd love you to have your best deal all the time. But to do that, to maintain that over the course of 110-pitch outing, 30 starts and 32 starts in a year, 170 to 180, 190 innings, like you can't, it's very hard for guys to be max effort every pitch. And relievers definitely have a more buffer there to be able to move faster and throw harder and be more max effort at a higher clip. So, I think it's very strength-based, very important to be able to maintain what you have over a long period of time. And so that's what those guys kind of try to build.
We've been hearing about 90 wins ever since Craig Counsell's season-ending press conference about getting back to being a 90-win team. It's been the case with Jed. It's been the case with Tom Ricketts when he joined us a couple of weeks ago. How do you navigate like a message of, okay, yeah, we want it to be 90 wins and get back to being a perennial playoff team? Does it change how you game plan at all? I mean, that's always your goal, but how do you actually apply that knowing that there's so much on this season about getting back to the postseason?
Yeah, for me, like on the coaching side, especially like overarching themes and messages for the pitchers, I don't think it changes much for us. Like our goal, every day we go out there is we want to, we're trying to win every game we play, Yeah. So like, yeah, I know that's not realistic, but we're trying to win every game we play. But the big thing we talk about every week is keep winning series. If you win series, you're going to win 90 games. It's just the way if you do the math throughout the season. So we make a lot. We talk a lot about winning series, being able to make adjustments within series. When we play teams, we're going to see a lot of teams back to back in April this year, like being able to make adjustments that we need to, being able to be dynamic as a group and communicate on what we need to get better at. Like, ultimately, that's what we focus on. You know, keep winning each day, keep winning each series, and I believe that we have the talent that 90 wins is going to take care of itself.
Tommy, in closing, thank you, Ryan and I do, for joining us today. I look forward to seeing you next Sunday when the Cubs open up. My final question to you is, if you have a choice between a young guy with a power arm like Hodge and a guy like Presley who's done it, and Craig Counsell says, Tommy, the choice is yours. Which way would we go? Which will never happen, of course. but it will be in conversations, knowing the conversations that you guys all have among the coaching staff. Where do you go? I mean, do you worry about bringing in a former closer who wants to close again and not getting the job, or do you worry about the young guy that proved it backing up in his mentality because now he's a setup man? How do you look at it?
I believe that there are guys that learn how to navigate big moments, and that takes time. Some guys have it right away. Some guys develop it over time. Ryan Presley is one of those guys that develop the opportunity or develop the skill to slow the game down and control himself. I've known Ryan since he was 19 years old. I was rehabbing Tommy John in 2008 when the Red Sox drafted him, spent some time with him there, and then I was rehabbing in 09. We got to play together a little bit. I've seen the growth that he's had in his career. It reminds me a lot of a Porter Hodge, you know, when Porter first came up. So I know I'm not really answering your question, but
I didn't expect you to.
I think there's extreme value in guys that have been there and done it and can control the environment. But at the end of the game, you want your best stuff out there. There's no question about that. And I believe Porter's got the ability to do that.
Tommy, we appreciate you joining us. Before we let you go, more excited about reporting on next Sunday for pitchers and catchers, or on that same day, the Kansas City Chiefs going for their third straight Super Bowl?
Yeah, if you
it's
guys
okay to answer either one.
On Sunday, I'll be the guy wearing Chiefs gear somewhere around. So
you're the one guy in Chicago, not sick of it.
It's a great day. It's like a holiday. It's the first day of pitcher and catcher and Super Bowl. It's a pretty good day.
Especially when the Kansas City Chiefs are playing. Tommy Hotovy, pitching coach of the Chicago Cubs. Be safe as you get to work the rest of the way to Mesa, and Bruce will see you down there next Sunday. He'll try to be bothering you. He'll want to know where you're watching the game.
Yeah, Tommy moves fast. He knows how to get away from me. Take care, buddy. Safe travels, okay?
All right, thank you.
Take care. Tommy Hotovy, pitching coach of the Chicago Cubs. We are going to continue a brief Cubs discussion at the other side of the break. They opened a new spot in the Wrigley Field bleachers called The Yard. It's happening in 2025. They unveiled the new outdoor space earlier this week. We'll talk to Cale Venom, the senior VP of ticketing for the Cubs, as he tries to get Bruce a spot out there in the yard. It's inside the clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Back on Inside the Clubhouse, Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine here for our version of the ninth inning. As Bruce he's getting ready to go. Bruce, in 8 days from now, is going to be in sunny Arizona, much sunnier than here. I'm a little jealous of that, but I look forward to him getting down there and the great guests we'll have on our show. Speaking of guests, we go back to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. The Cubs unveiled a new outdoor space in the bleachers for 2025, and we are pleased to be joined by Cubs Senior Vice President of Ticketing, Cale Venom, to talk about The Yard. Cale, thanks for joining us this morning. What was the origin of this space, the idea of it? Looking at the press release and stuff like that earlier this week, it talked about kind of bringing your backyard to the bleachers. So thanks for joining us and open up a little bit about the yard.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. It's good to be talking about baseball on a chilly February morning. Really, when we were thinking about building the space out there, we were thinking about those perfect days in the summer when you're sitting in your backyard and you've got a cooler of drinks and you're hanging out with your friends and, you know, listening to the Cubs game on the radio. And how could we bring an experience like that into Wrigley? And so we were fortunate enough to have a space that became available and, put our heads together and came up with a yard, and think it's going to be a lot of fun out at Wrigley this year.
Can you talk about the experience itself and what people might find when they end up there for the first time? I know initially it's for people 4 and 6 in a group, but explain, you know, kind of the setting of what it would be all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's 5 different tables out there. They can hold as few as 4 people, or the entire space could hold 50. And it's going to be right in the middle of the bleachers. So as you guys know, being at Wrigley all the time, like, there is nothing that compares to the Budweiser bleachers at Wrigley across all of Major League Baseball. And so to have a kind of reserved space right in the middle of the bleachers that's all inclusive, you've got all of your drinks that are included in with your ticket. You'll have a meal included, so you can get a Vienna beef hot dog or a small Cheval burger. To have that right in the middle of what we think is the absolute best atmosphere in sports, it's really kind of a one-of-a-kind option. And to be able to do that for a group as small as 4 is something that we never really had at Wrigley before. So I think that's why it's gotten so much excitement, and we've had such a good reception for it so far.
Sign me up for the small Cheval burger as we speak. Right. Talk about the sight lines. What's the visual like out there? Are there TVs as well to go along with the experience? Just give us a little kind of peek behind the curtain there.
Yeah, no TVs because you're in the best spot in the ballpark. I mean, you're dead center at Wrigley Field. You're right over where the batter's eye is. So, you know, you've got kind of the perfect view. It's basically the same thing that PCA is going to see all year long. And you'll be right there in it. So no TVs because you're already at the spot where you can see everything.
Kale, how do people go about getting this? Can they buy these in advance? You talked about it can be a space that you guys use for four up to 50. How's that going to be figured out? And how much in advance can people look ahead to X team on the 4th of July and we want six?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're available right now at cubsuites.com. We went on sale earlier this week. And honestly, I think the reception, we were excited about it, but it surprised us. So we sold out of 20% of all of the seats out there on the very first day before people had even heard about it. They just heard about it that morning. So they're moving really, really quickly, but they're available right now at cubsuites.com, and they're moving really, really quickly. And so, yeah, we really think this is something where, you know, you and four or five friends are going to go out to a game, or, you know, maybe you're going to do a small little bachelor party outing, or you're going to do a couple's date night, something like that, that it's going to be a really relaxed space. It's going to be really social. It's going to be a place for Cubs fans that just, they want a reserve spot in the bleachers. They want all their, you know, drinks and food included. So you don't have to worry about anything when you get to the ballpark, and everything's going to be taken care of for you.
So Pat and Ron and Zach will be broadcasting from Wrigley Field opening day, March 18th and 19th from Japan. Okay. If you can get the idea, how much would my four seats cost me on March 18th out there so I can join Pat, Ron, and Zach for opening day in Japan?
And March 18th is going to be a different thing altogether. The interest we've had for Japan and the demand for that game over there it might be the highest demand regular season baseball game in MLB history. It's absolutely insane. But at Wrigley Field starting the year, the tickets are going to start at $175 a ticket. They'll vary a little bit by game based on, you know, who we're playing and what time of the year and that type of thing. But they'll start at $175 a ticket. And like I said, they're available right now on cubsuites.com.
Sign Ryan and I up, okay, Kale?
Call it a date. Date night for Bruce and Ryan.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you guys out there. That'd be awesome.
We're looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Kale. Have a great
day. Appreciate you.
All right, y'all as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to going out there, actually. That should be fun. Get a little small Cheval burger.
A Cheval burger?
So we'll start our date night actually at it's a burger joint. There's one outside of Wrigley.
It's like a smash burger. Okay. Do they have an impossible Cheval burger?
Do they have? I bet that they do.
All right.
Well, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure we get everything we need for our date at the yard. It does look like a cool section. The Cubs are always, you know, both sides of town, Bruce, do a really good job of always trying to find unique ways to, you know, service the fans. And hopefully, as Crane tells us often, that money that goes into the yard kicks back into another way to get money towards the team payroll. That's the hope.
I'm hoping I can get a few bucks for myself.
Well, you got 175 because that'll get you in.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, our good friend Zach Zaidman sitting in for Steve Rosenblum coming up here. We'll have an awful lot of football talk. I think he'll manage some DePaul basketball talk. I believe
he broke the streak.
I believe there'll be some baseball talk. Zach is fantastic, and look forward to his next 3 hours.
All right, Bruce, in the next 60 seconds, give me one thing, anything you expect this week. Will either side make a move, make an addition, as you get ready to get the car loaded up for spring training?
I will say that Alex Bregman makes his decision before next weekend.
So not the Cubs.
I didn't say that.
I did. Not the Cubs. Bruce, been another great week. We thank Ethan Katz. We thank Tommy Hotovy. We thank Kale Venom for joining us. Obviously, Robbie behind the glass, who makes us sound and look good. Always. You can look good and still have a face for radio.
People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Keep you up on White Sox and Cubs moves all week long. Ryan, have a great week. See you next Saturday.
You too, pal. I'm at Ryan McGuffey, the White Sox Recap Podcast. Ethan Katz, our guest this week. It's been Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.